I think we're going to get started. Thank you for coming out in not too great of a day weather-wise. It's good to see you. Welcome to Out From Behind the Apron. I'm Kathleen Horan. I'll be your server this afternoon. I borrowed this apron, and there's some food chunks still on it, so I'm really getting into character. So, as many of you know, there are about 24,000 restaurants in the city, and while not all of them are full-service eateries, the food and beverage industry employs about 6.3% of the private sector workforce. So that'll give you a sense. It's a large employer in the city, and many of you are employed in the food and beverage industry. So we're going to play a video, a short video, to get the program started. Thank you.
No onions, only Swiss cheese, melted. Okay, sweetheart. Can you make me nice sandwiches? I've been waiting tables in the city for the past 32 years. I come back to the other one. I used to work in Midtown, which is a lot of nice restaurants. And whenever I apply, they ask my age and they look at me like, I don't think so. And I felt so bad. Because a lot of places, they say bars, they want somebody pretty, somebody like youthful. Even though a lot of people don't look at your face. When somebody says, oh, look at the way you look, I said, believe me, they're not looking at my face. Even at home, when my kids were teenagers, they're doing some work, like a little challenging work in a college or something, and then I'm trying to advise them how to do it. All of a sudden, I said, Mom, but you're a waitress. So it's like, okay, you're only a waitress. I went to school too, but I chose this because I want to raise my family and be with my family. When I see one person alone, I say, are you okay? Are you from the city? And that makes them feel good sometimes. Sometimes they want to be in their own world. They say, no, I'm fine, and they just keep on doing it, so we keep away. I say, wow, they are so independent that they can just sit down, have fun, eat whatever they want, and just continue to do their business. Older people, when they come to eat, it's annoying the fact that they order one soup and they have a sandwich and they share. Sometimes they order only water. They could give you maybe a dollar tip. But then you realize, you know what? Older people spend a lot of money in medicines and stuff. And I said, for them, probably this is a treat. They have maybe $20. And with those $20, they're going to stretch it out. And you're going to make it like a nice event for them. That touches my heart. So we try to make it pleasant for them. Dinner chop liver. Everybody's happy when they go to eat. Definitely, no matter what. If you eat it, you're hungry, and I said, that's it, I'm going to eat. Especially if you go to a special place that you like, that's it, I'm going to eat, or I'm going to meet somebody. So I like that, to see people in a happy environment. We try to keep in that kind of happy mood. But you feel very helpful when you're pleasing people. Maybe that's what it is. As a server, you feel like you're helping out people to get in a good mood. Those matzo balls? What I think is sometimes they think that the reserve, it could be replaced easy. Like a chair, okay, that's not good, let's replace it. The chef, they don't. Behind the scenes, maybe if the owner sees working with the people, if they happen to like take a survey of the people that we serve and the people tell the way they feel about us, then it would be a different story. You know, we have very good food here, the truth. And then when they don't touch the food, it says something wrong with the person. It's not the food. And, you know, like, you have to give them a little support. Sometimes they tell us things that they wouldn't tell, like, their own friends. Oh, my God, we must be psychologists here. My experience in this is, like, it's therapeutic for me and for the person that come here. Few years back, I had a very bad time in my life. And the only thing that kept me going was this job.
That was Fanny Alava, who couldn't be with us today. She's in the South, seeing to some family problems, some family issues. But she said that she wanted to give her regards to everyone. And as she touched on in the video, going out to eat and drink isn't just about... Let me start again. In a time when everyone's online and fused to their gadgets, going out to restaurants isn't just about eating and drinking. It's about human interaction. So as you can see on the board of today's specials, we'll be touching on a number of different issues today, including the way the industry is changing and yet to change, the mysterious practice of tipping, pet peeves and memorable stories, and how serving can alter your life. And to speak about that, we're going to invite two of our guests to the stage here. We have a psychotherapist of mind-body therapy at Memorial Sloan Kettering's Integrative Medicine Center and former server of 15 years, Robert Schmer. And author of 8 books, actor, and former bar owner, Malachi McCourt. Robert, I'm going to start with you.
I was sober when this happened. broke my hip. Thank you, Kathleen.
Thank you, Malachi. Now, Robert, many in the industry say that the job of serving can change you for life. Why is that, and how did it change you, if at all?
Well, I'm here. And I wouldn't be here were it not for getting my first busboy job at 15 that parlayed into some remarkable waiter positions and maitre d' positions. So it gave me money to travel and see the world and pursue education. So it's a practical thing. But more important, it exposed me to a wide range of people. I adored that video. The richness that she describes was it. I was raised rather without much money, and I met people with a lot of money who knew a lot of things that I didn't know. And I also met people who had just arrived in this country and didn't speak English. And I had to learn how to communicate with some of the most sophisticated people in New York and some of the people who were even more scared than I was. And I was really scared. I don't think I was the world's best waiter by a long shot. And it gave me an opportunity to study myself and the way I regulate my anxiety, the way I communicate, and the way I listen to others.
And sort of what people are saying with their words and what they're saying underneath the surface, or what they want but they're not asking for?
Well, absolutely. Is this a leading question, Kathleen?
It might be.
Okay. I work as a psychotherapist, and my training is in relational psychoanalysis. And so I worked very hard in the restaurant business, and I made a lot of money. I got to say, it was really addictive. And when I left the restaurant business, I took a 50% pay cut to work in a community hospital. And I was working with really sophisticated people. They were all Ivy League educated, and me, who had just graduated from 15 years of working in restaurants with a bachelor's degree. And what I realized pretty quickly is that I could do a lot of things that these people with a lot of degrees could not do. I could listen in a way that they couldn't, and I had lots of creative solutions and workarounds that were very helpful in organizational settings. The programs that I was put in charge of really thrived, and within a couple of years, I was making more money than I was making in restaurants, which surprised everyone.
So how are servers and therapists alike? What similarities do you see in your own experience, if at all?
Well, first of all, the ability to listen skillfully. A good server is able to listen to the multiple needs at the table. So specifically, once I was no longer doing it anymore, I was impressed by how sophisticated you need to be a good waiter or a good maitre d' or a good bartender. In particular, in psychoanalytic training, what do we study? The childhood. And what happens in early development is the way you're fed, the way you're cleaned, the way you're cared for. So when somebody comes to me for psychotherapy for the first time and say they're not very sophisticated and what this means, they're going to say, why are you not talking? What am I supposed to say? And I might give them a little education, Well, basically, in therapy, here's what you talk about. You just come in. The goal is to be able to say everything, but here are the main topics: the past, the present, the future, your dreams, sex, and money. Now, as a server of any sort, that is what you're helping people negotiate. If somebody's getting engaged, it's a very easy negotiation. But if somebody's having a tense night, it's not. Or if it's a second date and the guy really wants to get his date home, he's sitting on his wallet. It's about the money, which is a metaphor for the phallus.
So I think that's a good transitional point. So Malachy, your time owning the famous bar that bore your name in the 1960s, Malachy's, as well as helping to run Over the Bar, other bars over the years, helped you to form another similar theory that bartenders are like a member of the clergy?
Yes. Well, if you look at any situation where there is a center, a power center, in courtrooms, judges up there, you're going to an office, the boss is right there in front of you, teachers are by the desk, and the priest is by the altar. So let's go to the bar. And I did not aspire to holy orders, being an unholy man, but if you look at the bar, there is His Reverence. And that's changed now because finally women are being allowed to serve. The church, of course, is very biased in that department. They won't allow women to be priests, but they will allow them to bear the body and blood of Jesus, and but keep them out of the priesthood. But anyway, that's another matter, and we'll deal with it later.
But what about confessions?
Well, you stand there, and there's a lot of incantations, a lot of muttering. You don't know what the bloody guy is saying. $4 and $4 make $8. 8.75% tax. Amen. Ring. And there we are. And then you have people talking to you. And generally speaking, people who are disturbed will park themselves at the end of the bar. And they are usually very angry and sarcastic, and they say things like, "Give me ya, give me ya, give me ya a scotch, give me ya, give me ya," and so on. They're very rude as a rule. So and you place it up.
And you want to finish up?
Yeah. I don't really, but... but anyway, finally, if you just question enough, you will realize, for instance, if they're carrying a very full briefcase, you know they've just been fired. If they really make a comment about who's that bitch down there, you know their wife has just left them. And so you have to figure it out, as Robert was saying, as you have to figure out what it is. And very slowly you get a guy going from Gimia, and then she's sleeping in my bed with her lover.
And speaking of that, Robert, has your time that you spent in the restaurant industry and being in the weeds, do you draw upon that when people are on the couch, so to speak?
No question. Being a waiter in a busy restaurant in the weeds is perhaps the hardest thing I've ever done. The amount of pressure that a waiter has to be able to manage, I think, would probably compare with some of things like surgery or being in a really tense court situation. There's so many competing priorities that a waiter has to deal with internally. Your nervous system gets overly excited. And to be able to manage that is a great skill, a great professional skill that relates to everything. Now, here's what's unique about being a server, and I think it's different than the other professions I just described, is that it's looked down on as you're just a waiter, you're just a bartender. And in fact, to do this, you have to have a skill that most doctors and lawyers I know don't have.
That's probably a good point.
Why they're sitting at your bar so angry.
Well, it's also that it's interesting that you say that about being looked down on. We cannot define bartending as a profession. It's an occupation, And no matter what you call it, mixologist.
Or a vocation.
Or a vocation. Well, it's a job. That's what it is. And most people go on from it, or they get to own the bar, which is an entirely different matter that makes you a business person.
So has anyone out there gotten any incredible confessions, either standing behind the bar or wearing the apron? We have roving microphones. Or if anyone wants to comment on the fact that this isn't seen as a profession, this is a forum where we want you to share your stories. So if anyone has anything to add, don't be shy.
Although,
yeah. Stephen?
You know, my favorite question when I was a waiter is they would say, "So what else do you do?" You know. And that was the only thing I was doing. So I would lie. You know, I would say, oh, I'm a hitman, you know.
Have you ever said you were a parking, that you were like a meter man? You gave tickets?
That was a friend of mine. But I said I was in the pornography industry. You know, I said I was just got out of the Foreign Legion, all sorts of things, just to shut people up. Mm. But you're absolutely right. It is a profession that's looked down on. I always said the customers were very nice to me, but if I was dating their daughter, forget it. So it's like, guess who's coming to dinner? Hmm.
Does anyone have a theory as to why it's not a respected profession? Will you introduce yourself?
Thanks, Kathleen. My name is Silas Resta. I have barely 14 years experience in this industry. Well, I came from Nepal, a teeny tiny country, and my dream was not about any luxury and comfort. It's more about my kind of respect, dignity. And, well, I started from that time to up to now. I do not see that kind of respect and dignity in my job.
Why not? Why not? Why do you think not?
Because in a certain class in this country, they have a kind of prejudiced idea and a thought about us. So they feel we are not the people who can entertain your people right here. I felt that way because they blame your linguistic problem, your appearance, could be a lot of things. So some kind of short elite class, they have a kind of a prejudiced idea and a thought.
Robert,
that's why
Mal-
I feel so far it is not the kind of area where I can feel it proud and dignity.
Thank you. Malachi or Robert, do you have any final thoughts about why this isn't?
People, well, it's funny. I think there is a thing about it's a fundamentalist thought in America about that alcohol is evil. And that comes from conservatism in that there it will allow you to lose your mind. And it's so they put in stupid laws. They prohibited the sale of alcohol in, during Prohibition, the greatest constitutional disaster in the history of the United States, because
made
it led to organized crime, which is
the
same as organized
too,
religion. But people still say to me, now, I have been out of the business for 30 years. I had a good time while I was in it. But to this day, sometimes people will say to me, I remember you when you were just a bartender. Well, what exactly do you mean by that, asshole? You remember. So do I. And so now I've been in the acting trade. I've been an author. I've been on, I have 8 books, as you said. I have been on the radio. I ran for governor. And I remember you when you were just a bartender.
It's not too subtle, is it?
No, it isn't. Yeah. This is what do they want you to be? It's still in diapers?
Any final thoughts before we move on?
Well, I don't know if we would be having the same conversation in certain other countries. I think there is something unique to the United States where everything is expert-driven. And in other countries, service and food are respected in a way that in the United States they aren't. We have so much money, we have so much food, and yet we don't know how to eat, we don't know how to enjoy it, and we have this really funny weight problem. So
not so funny, right?
So I know that in France, in Italy, and many other countries, it is a more respected profession. and the art of serving as well as the art of eating is more respected. So I think it's a greater issue, but I think as a waiter or a waitress or a server, I'm sorry, I'm so un-PC, I'm old. In this country, it's unique because it's only seen as a stepping stone, and if you that means that you're somebody to be stepped on.
Yeah.
And it's very hard emotionally to regulate that anxiety on top of the anxiety of the job itself. And I guess my mission here is that it really is a very sophisticated skill set that servers have, and you could put your resumes anywhere. But we don't want to lose you. We'd like you to moreover, appreciate what you do as a great art form and a great profession.
Thank you. Now we're going to move on to the next section. Thank you, gentlemen. One thing that Robert mentioned as a stepping stone, one thing that I keep hearing in the industry is that this job isn't as much of a stepping stone as people believe it is, and that actually people stay in the industry for, it's not uncommon for people to stay in the industry for decades. A show of hands, how many people have been doing this more than 5 years? I see a lot of hands. More than 10 years? I see several hands. So how about more than 20 years? Wow, that's still a lot of people. That's interesting. So now we're going to look at the way the industry is changing and yet to change. There's a bunch of new state laws that are going into effect. They've actually already been approved in January, but owners have a transitional period until next month to get them all implemented. And I can't go into all of them because there's a lot, but they include increasing the minimum wage, specifics about who can be a part of the tip pool, it's only food service workers, and how a split shift, or they call them, it's called the spread of hours rules, they've changed. Now, when employees work more than 10 hours, their employer has to pay them an extra hour at $7.25. And on banquets, if the restaurant applies a service charge, if the fee isn't a gratuity, customers must be informed that the money won't be distributed to employees. And the message must be written in no smaller than a 10-point font on the bill. How's that for specifics? Does anyone have any opinion on the changes in the laws? Are any of these laws going to affect anyone here in the room for the better? If you can introduce yourself.
Sure. I'm Emily.
Yeah, I'll just hold it for you.
Oh, okay. awesome.
Emily, if you can say your last name and how long you've been working as a
server. Sanders, Emily Sanders. I've been working in New York for like 8 years on and off, and then I worked in Massachusetts beforehand. Currently, I actually work with employers as well, like through my organization I work with, Rock New York, and for me personally, because I do work on weekends as well, as I'm sure everyone else probably, it's hard to quit. Someone said it was addictive. It's a really addictive industry. $5 an hour may sound like nothing, but I guarantee there's going to be a lot of people out there who don't, employers who aren't aware of this law, and it's going to, I think the long-term effect could be really interesting, so I've been trying to make it really obvious to the people I work with that this is going to be March 1st. You are responsible from January 1st onward. In addition, regarding the who's involved with the tips. No, what were we saying? Who's involved with the...
who's in the tip pool.
Yes, thank you. Sorry. In the tip pool. I think the goal of that law, from what I've been able to ascertain here, was because people are tipped out, they're allowed to be paid $5 an hour, but what's going to happen is it's sort of vice versa, whereas now they're going to go up to $7.25 and it's no tips at all. So the amount of money lost, even though the Labor Department may have been trying to help workers, could be quite a bit. Do you see what I mean?
So, what do you mean?
Oh... So, like,
are you clear?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's okay. You can talk slower. You have our attention.
Okay. No, I just, so I think the goal of the law was to make sure people got the money they deserved, i.e. support staff like bussers, runners, even, let's say, people who are just polishing, for example, in a restaurant because it's a fine dining restaurant. What's going to happen, I think, is that they're going to either eliminate some positions or bump up the wage to $7.25 and thus take away all tips, and that's going to lower the person's income.
And just quickly, why is the job addictive? You piqued my interest.
Oh, it's really hard to say no to cash. And that's something that's changing around the industry, is it's increasingly becoming credit card driven. I'm going to say, frankly, for many, many decades, people didn't declare certain things. Now you have to, you know, more importantly, actually, the state and like federal governments are going broke, so there's additional audits that are happening to workers and employers.
And now most of the tips are going to be on the books, so to speak, right?
Yeah, that's another thing, is that you're going to see more and more of your money is being paid attention to, whereas for a long time in the industry, it was sort of you did your own finances and no one really paid attention.
So Andrew Ridgey, you're director of operations for the State Restaurant Association. What are owners saying about the new rules? Are they jazzed about them?
Well, I think that they're so complex. I mean, a perfect example, I know this stuff because I kind of have to live it and breathe it and figure out what works, what you can do, which opinion letter says what, and try and bring some sort of clarity. I think a perfect example between the spread of hours, the tip rules, tip pooling, and the 80-20 rule, you mentioned polishers, who can belong, who can be can you take the tip credit for? It's so complex. I mean, I could go through step by step, because one of the reasons you've seen many of these lawsuits, and I think by default, a lot of very well-intentioned restaurateurs have been audited by the Department of Labor or been, you know, on the losing side of a lawsuit, is because they don't know what to do to comply. For instance, the spread of hours isn't for working 10 hours. It's actually the interval of your day. So if you say you're working a double, which so many people, especially in New York City, want to do, if you're pursuing another career, you're in school, you have children home, you would probably rather work 3 days, work three doubles, than work 6 days a week. Because the spread of hours has now been spread and will impact all people in the industry that are not excluded from being paid minimum wage, that means that if you want to start your day and end your day, even if you only work 2 hours.
And you had a break in between.
Yeah, so for instance, you go in for a lunch at shift at noon. At 4, you clock out. You take a 2-hour break and you come in to work another dinner shift for 4 hours and 1 minute. Basically, the interval from the start to the end of your day is 10 hours and 1 minute. The employer will then be required to pay that employee one additional hour at the minimum wage, which is $7.25.
So do you think that will make employers not pay the $7.25? I mean, to most of us, $7.25 doesn't seem like a big deal.
Unfortunately, I don't think it's going – I think it's going to have the opposite effect in, you know, representing working with restaurant employers, but then also working with the employees. So many of our operators have had issues when their employees are coming and saying, hey, I want to work these doubles. This is why I moved to New York City. This is why I work in the industry, to work doubles and have this lifestyle.
What's your – I'm sorry to interrupt.
I would just say the last thing, but the employers are turning around. I was looking at a restaurant group the other day. The increase to their payroll currently, because they're offering people doubles, is going to be $325,000 a year. Most of these people cannot afford that. I mean, taking away $325,000 means you're not opening up the second restaurant employing people. It's become almost cost prohibitive and impacts in many ways the employees rather than the employers.
So Reka Iani Rodriguez, you're co-director of the Restaurant Opportunity Center, an organizing and employee advocacy group. What new rule does ROC most support?
Can I stand?
Sure, that'd be great.
I feel awkward not being able to face the crowd. So I think that to Mr. Ridgey's point, first of all, about restaurant owners not knowing what the law is, I am always, always for education of restaurant owners first and foremost. I think at the end of the day, you can't have good working conditions in a restaurant unless the boss knows what they're doing and they're making sure to apply to the laws. But I do want to say that it is no mistake. Many restaurant owners, and I'm talking about some of the most sophisticated restaurant owners in the city, know what they're doing. And they consult with their tax attorneys. They consult with human resources attorneys, some of the biggest firms, to make sure that they are cheating workers from their tips. And so in particular, I think the things that we care most about is just transparency. I think everybody in this room can point to a time when your tip was mysteriously taken from the tip pool, and all of a sudden you're like, where's this money going? And so I think for us, having some clarification that now customers have to know, you know, where their gratuity is going, for example, is it going to the worker or is it going to the house, is something that we truly, truly care about, and I think is going to have a big impact.
I'll be right back to you. Do you want to respond to that? Is that really a problem?
Yeah, I think education is the number one issue. I mean, the issue is, I think in any industry, there's something just intrinsic in human nature that not everyone's going to be honest.
But what about tip stealing?
Well, tip stealing, no one's going to defend someone that is trying to break the law. But for instance, when it comes to a service charge and who can take gratuity, and you know, gratuities are not taxable, service charges are taxable. There were lawsuits where there were two after the World Yacht case, and not to get into too much detail.
That's kind of inside baseball, World Yacht case.
Basically, no one knew what the law was. There were two conflicting opinion letters by the Department of Labor.
This is, we're going down into the ravine when you go
Basically, there were two different rules. There was a law on the books that no one understood, and then there were two letters from opinion letters.
But what's your main point?
My main point is that there were two different opinion letters that said two different things. So an employer had to decide, am I going to comply with this law or comply with that law?
So you're saying it's confusing and that employers are actually confused. I know that you've been saying that you've been having a lot of, sessions and seminars for owners about how to comply with this. Yes?
Yeah, and I think the best thing that we can all do is where the employers and employees get together. You're never going to do anything about the bad guys. There's always going to be bad people out there, but get people clarity. I've spoken with attorneys, accounting department that have international restaurants.
Clarity.
No one knows what to do.
So you were going to say something about the banquet rules before we move on?
Yeah. So what ends up happening, I think from a lot of people that work in banquets might recognize this. You know, you work a banquet, you might be paid a flat shift that night. You work a banquet, you're paid $150, let's say. And that restaurant is charging their customers 23%. You're talking about a restaurant, for example, which we're going to talk about, Mario Batali's Del Posto, one of the most sophisticated four-star restaurants in the city. They should know better. What are they doing? They're charging customers 23% and giving the workers $100, $150, $200 to work multiple banquets. Imagine the kind of money that these restaurants are making. And I don't think it's a few small bad apples. I think that this is a pervasive problem in this industry. We have over 4,600 restaurant workers in our membership, and I guarantee 75% can account for that. I hope people in this room can too.
Just before we go speak to a Del Posto worker, Ed Schoenfeld, I know that you've been a restaurant owner and consultant and on, you're going to open a new restaurant called Red Farm on Hudson Street next month. But you know, in some of my talks with you, you've said that restaurant owners actually, after they have all of their expenses and everything, actually don't make very much. Do you want to talk about that? Or there's times where they don't make very much. I mean, I want you to put it in your own words.
Well, I mean, there are so many different restaurants and so many different cases, it's hard to generalize. But as a rule, from a pro forma point of view, a typical restaurateur would make 15% profit in a year. Maybe make 20, might easily these days make nothing or make 7%. So small changes in watching your costs carefully is critical to having a healthy business. And you can only employ workers if you have a going business. Closed businesses don't create jobs. So, you know, there are two sides to every story. I spent most of my life, the first half of my life, as a tipped employee, and you know, I have a good appreciation of both ways and of the teamwork that's necessary to go into to a restaurant that makes for a successful outcome for everybody. You know, I think in the best situations, there's a congruency between the interests of the workers and the interests of the ownership.
So is there a Del Posto employee who would like to briefly talk about your experience? We don't have both sides here. Mario Batali somehow couldn't be here today, so maybe you could fill us in briefly.
Well, my name is David. I'm from Ecuador. I work for the Del Posto.
What's your last name?
Giancarlo. It's kind of weird last name. Well, I worked for the Posto like since they opened, since they won, and I've been there. And thing is that I'm a part of the campaign.
I'm sorry. What was your experience there? Why is this litigation going on with the restaurant?
Well, the main things are because if there's so much money being stolen about the banquet issues and also about the racial thing, like so many discrimination going on against the Latinos and also the other different ethnic of people, as well as so much hours not been paid, and there's so many issues that I could talk about all day long, but just quickly is about that we're doing, and I mean part of the poster campaign with Rock New York to actually get the money that they stole from us, because we're not asking from their money. We're just asking from money that we lost there.
This was via a banquet. This is before the rules changed. There was something. Jeff, do you want to come in? But I think that you could explain it a little bit more specifically, Jeff, if you want to complete.
Well, the only thing that I would say is that...
Will you just introduce yourself, please?
My name is Jeff Mansfield, and I work as an organizer at Rockwell New York, and I've had the privilege and the honor of working with a lot of workers in the New York City restaurant industry, workers like David from Del Posto and all the other workers from Del Posto who are part of the campaign. The one thing I would say is that sometimes maybe employers feel confused about what the rules are. Well, that's why... there are so many organizations that are out there like Rock New York and other people and workers trying to explain what the rules are to employers. The people who are definitely not confused about what's fair, about what's right, and about what's just is workers like David and the workers from Del Posto who came to Rock New York to say our tips are being stolen, there's discrimination on the job, we can't get promotions the same way, there's a lot of abuses on the job, verbally and other kinds of abuses. And so those are the types of things that workers are standing up and fighting out against all the time in New York now.
And I have an excerpt here. I think that via the Batali lawyers, they drew up a restraining order against you guys. Yeah. It's pretty long. They don't really like you. They say that you claim to represent employees of the restaurant and are alleging violations of various employment laws, and that you're playing dirty pool. It's sort of what they say in the letter. But this is just what happens when you hire lawyers to fight things out for you, or what?
Well,
just quickly.
I mean, it's the workers who are fighting things out, and it's a part of the legal process. We consider this temporary restraining order to be one step on the road towards settlement. It just shows that they were really upset with workers and their allies who were outside the restaurant protesting to let people know what was happening. They tried everything they could to stop it, and this is one of the things they did to try and stop it. But we're definitely moving towards settlement. The workers are unified. They're organized. They know what they want. That's why David is here today to speak about what's happening at his restaurant.
Thank you. Did you want to have anything, last thoughts about this?
Just the thing that against the restraining order about them, it's just that they're saying that they're the ones who are protesting outside, but that's not true because, I mean, we're all working inside, but we're all supporting them from inside.
How long have you worked there?
Since the beginning, 2005.
And you still work there?
Yes.
Thank you. Another issue... Another issue is something in a study that Rock commissioned called the Great Service Divide. It's based on a study Rock commissioned several years ago. And in it, you found that white male workers held the vast majority of front-of-the-house positions that are the most lucrative. Can you fill us in briefly?
Yeah, I think
Do you want to introduce yourself again?
Yes, I'm sorry. I'm Reka Ayani from the Restaurant Opportunity Center of New York. And the reason why we decided to commission such a study on race and gender in the industry is because for so long, you know, we would say race is a problem and gender discrimination is a problem. And people would say, what are you talking about? Go into any restaurant in New York City and you'll see tons of immigrants and people of color. And so we said, yes, we know that's the case, but this industry is a living wage industry where you can make a living and you can support yourself and your family. So where are, which positions are people of color getting? So we commissioned this study where we tested over 200 fine dining restaurants in New York, pairing up a white tester with a person of color to apply for a server position. And that's where we were able to prove people of color were half as likely as white workers to get the server position, even though, by the way, the persons of color were always more qualified in the testing process.
I see a hand over here. Is this an experience that you've had?
My name is Rafael Duran, and I am from Mexico. I've been working in the restaurant industry for 13 years. I've been occupying all the positions in the restaurant business. And I had noticed I experienced myself, there is a lot of discrimination in the industry. People of color are stereotyped to occupy the positions in which you get less money.
Have you gotten to make it up to waiter? Were you?
I am a waiter, and I have been a sommelier. But let's say that I look for job. So the first question that the manager or the person who is in front, in charge, will ask me, what do you want to be, a busboy or a food runner? So clearly this is a stereotype thing, you know, for age or something else that I want to...
I'm just going to get another thought. Okay, you want to finish up?
Yes. Something that is very clear about the tipping is that owners, they don't want to increase the wage of the managers. So for that reason, they take that wage from the tips.
When did you get promoted as waiter, and how hard? Can you just let us know how that happened?
I was a busboy and a food runner, and I had, and actually, you know, I saw that some people were hired right away because they were white. So for, in my case, it was very difficult. I had to learn the menu like from head to toe, and also I had to take some wine classes. I had to prove really hard that I could be a waiter.
And is that something that do either of you want to respond to? Is this something that you think is changing in the industry, or is this just something that is only going on in fine dining? What's your experience from the other side, from the owner operator side? Andrew Ridgie?
Yes. Oh, yeah, Andrew Ridgie. I'd say that it's really a complex situation. Depending on the neighborhood, the concept of the restaurant, you're going to see a lot of different stories. And the one focus thing that we do need to focus on, that regardless of the level and the pay rate, as long as they're being paid at least, people are being paid at least the minimum wage, I think we all need to, both from an employer and an employee side, figure out how to build people up, because there's no doubt you look at any other industry, this is a stepping stone. With little education, even if you may not step in the front of the house and be the general manager or be a maitre d', there's more opportunity in this industry than from a banking industry. Now, that doesn't mean that there may not be problems, but we need to work together, because what we're doing, and when you have a report that there's a divide, it sets you back. We need to move the conversation forward in a way that's helpful, rather than making employers scared that they're going to be sued, because you're creating an environment where it's becoming difficult to talk in many ways.
So let's say in the study, you know, people of different races applied, and it looks like the Caucasians got the better job. What do you think could be done in the industry, or can you respond to that specifically? Not to put you on the spot, but just, is there something that you can specifically speak to in that?
Sure. I think it's training. I mean, I grew up in the industry. I think that especially in this industry, depending on the concept of the restaurant, there's going to be certain skill sets that you need. And I think in-house training programs that more and more restaurants are starting to provide. And also, smaller restaurants do not have the capacity. A little mom-and-pop restaurant, they're working 7 days a week. In many cases, they may be taking home the same amount of money as some of their employees. And they're the ones at 3 o'clock in the morning that are getting the call. And they have families to feed as well. And many of these people started off as dishwashers, started off in the industry, and ended up owning their own business or as a manager. So again, it's bringing people together, because it's the hospitality industry and it's the service industry. So the last thing we want to do is split management and split the employees, because then the customer is not happy and no one does well.
A show of hands, who in here has faced this? Do you face, just a second. So will you introduce yourself and tell me your experience?
My name is Eric Brown. I started in the industry in 1987. Currently I'm unemployed, but my first job was in the back of the house washing dishes. I stayed washing dishes for a good year and a half. There's so many things I want to say right now. I've heard a lot of opinions about why the industry is the way it is. And I think something that people aren't mentioning is that the hospitality industry is just a microcosm of America. Robert, our first speaker, mentioned that service in other countries, we wouldn't be having this conversation. The conversation would be a little different. This conversation would be a little different in other parts of the city. We don't have to leave the country to notice the difference in the conversations.
What do you? What, but can you be more specific? Because I really want to know what you're saying.
Well, my point is you know, if I send my resume electronically to a manager at a restaurant, and I get called in for an interview for a management position, oftentimes they're surprised to see me walk through the door, because my resume does not suggest my color. However, this is something, you know, that I can't escape.
And for those listening at home, you're a person of color?
Yeah. You know, this is something that, like I said, you know, it's a microcosm of this nation in general. We've come to a point in 2011 where right now, you know, it's the haves versus the have-nots.
What's your current job, Eric?
Right now I'm unemployed.
Oh, right. Okay.
But I would like to just finish off by saying that, you know, this is not going to go away. You know, the reason that we're having this conversation today is because there is a problem in the industry. And as soon as owners and workers alike are able to sit down at the table together and have an open and honest discussion about what needs to be fixed, we will continue to have this conversation.
Thank you. And George, you had something to say, and then I want to go to you, Robert. George, will you introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is George Kornianko, and I just want to say what everyone had just reiterating about talking about the business, and very good point that he pointed out, being a microcosm of society in America in general. I'm a white male, for those of you listening at home who can't see or tell by now. But I just want to bring something out also, too, that restaurants just seem to also want a certain person. I mean, I remember years ago, I couldn't get a job in Manhattan, and I was told because I wasn't polished enough. I mean, I'm born and raised in Brooklyn. I knew just as much about food and wine as other people, you know, and people would, you know, that would be one of the things. And I know.
Was a New Yorker discriminating against your New York accent?
I would say so. And I mean, you know, Mayor Bloomberg, whose best friend who he always likes to quote, Danny Meyer, is on record of saying that for a time he wouldn't hire native New Yorkers because he didn't like the way they interacted with people, for lack of a better phrase. So, I mean, you know, I totally can sympathize absolutely with what he's saying about being Mexican, Ecuadorian, being African-American. But I also think that's as, you know, certain places, as Robert was saying, I believe, demand a certain skill set. And they're gonna use any excuse they can to use that. So,
this is a good jumping off point because there's not only the color divide, but there's something. Will you introduce yourself?
Hello, my name is Robert Lacavara, bartender, waiter, 22 years.
There's something you call show ponies and workhorses. Can you fill us in? Maybe you want to stand up. And which are you?
I am definitely a workhorse. Esteemed colleagues, good afternoon. A couple of things I'd like to comment about on the way to the workhorse show pony theory. First of all, the owners and people in the service industry will always be butting heads. We don't like you. We never like you because you take from us. We are expendable. If we don't like what you have to say, you'll fire us. So our job security is something that is, you know, that you put over us and you try to, I don't know, balance it out by saying, hey, you know, if you don't want to work here, find another job.
That's almost true in any industry, though. I mean, I think that, right?
Well, I think when...
Especially when there's a high unemployment rate. I mean,
sure. I mean, well, the high unemployment rate, I mean, as far as waiters and busboys and barbacks and bartenders.
I'll just hold it because I want you to use your hands.
Right. All right. So, you know, we're expendable. We can easily be replaced because they have 150 resumes sitting on their desk, or they can put an ad on Craigslist or anything and people will show up because they're looking for jobs for unemployment. As far as tipping goes, there's always two sets of books. We all know this. We try to keep it a secret, but cash is king, and the government will never find out how much cash we actually have in our pocket. The people that suffer are the busboys, the barbacks, and the people below, bartenders, waitstaff, etc. Because we get a tip pool. If I'm working with another bartender, it's the two of us, and we'll tip out our barback.
That's a great point.
Theory is never steal from your coworkers, always steal from the house. I mean, I would never steal from you, and I'd trust you never to steal from me. But if the house doesn't know what they're missing, then we're making out pretty good. And so is the bar back. Now, on tipping.
Okay, we're going to move to tipping in a minute, okay. But if you want to talk about workhorses, because this
workhorse
is...
Workhorse and show ponies. So in so many places that I've worked all over New York City, all many nightclubs, Crowbar, Twilo, Roxy, you name it, the good-looking people stand at the bar, whether they're qualified or they can work better or faster or have a conversation or they're just a great bartender, it doesn't matter, okay? It's the people that are beautiful that they want the people that come in to see the beautiful people. The people that do service bar and sling 1,000 drinks a night that are on the side or in the back are the workhorses of the bar. So we do 5 times more work than the good-looking people that don't even know what they're doing or how to serve a drink, but because of their breast size or because of their chiseled face or body, they're in the front row. Not that I'm saying I'm in the front row. All I'm saying is...
Can I get... can people applause if they agree with this theory? I have one comment over here. No?
Hi, my name's Carrie Hall. I'm currently employed as a bartender, but I am looking for new opportunities. And speaking to the Craigslist, currently looking on Craigslist right now, when you're looking under restaurant and server opportunities, they ask you to send in a resume and a photo. And there's no other section, there is no other industry, I believe, you know, aside from acting or modeling, that would require you, along with your resume, to send in a photograph of yourself as a qualification.
I've never heard of that. Has anyone else heard of that? So, wow, a photo. Can you tell me your experience? Will you introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name's Araby Smith, and I've been a bartender and server in New York and Brooklyn for 6 years. And the photo on Craigslist, for the listeners, I'm a white female, I'm 5'5", I have glasses. I learned very quickly I shouldn't send a photo. Because I have glasses. And I learned very quickly that on open calls in Manhattan, you know, in areas like Soho, the meatpacking district, I would show up wearing sensible flat shoes for serving and working long hours. A double shift, by the way, is usually 16 hours with no break, in my experience. It's not 4 hours and a 2-hour break. But just for clarification, because I heard that earlier. And I'd show up in flat shoes and, you know, slacks and a long sleeve shirt or something, and I'd be surrounded by women, you know, way more attractive than me by modeling or magazine standards, and I'd never got a call back, and I stopped going to open calls, and I stopped sending photos because 6 years of experience doesn't matter.
Wow.
Appearance matters.
So, you know, this might just be happening in some places. I see a lot of hands, but I don't want you to feel like there's a heater under your seat, putting you on the hot seat, Andrew Ridgey, but from the other side, I'm sure that if more owners were here, they would...
you cannot defend someone that's breaking a law, especially when it's a very clear-cut line. I just met with restaurateurs, and I think this is especially for, you know, the people with skills and experience or those people that want to work hard. I had a meeting with about 8 restaurateurs, and I talk with them every day. The most important thing is finding good help, people that have skills, that are passionate, and care about the business. But when they hear you make your money because you're stealing from the house, that's not... you know, reassuring for a business person. Again, there's no excuse for anyone that's breaking the law, but I think there are opportunities. These conversations are important. And I think if you have restaurateurs and you have employees actually sit down and have, like this gentleman over here said, an open dialogue, you'll see that there's a lot more in common. And many of those owners, they started off washing the dishes.
They've forgotten what it's like. I'm pretty sure that someone like Mario Batali or Danny Meyer, even the mayor, who loves to go out and eat. You know, there's an issue that Christine Quinn has put on the back burner for some time now about paid sick days, where in the industry, especially in industry like food service, where you can't afford to take a day off even if you've got SARS or bird flu.
Okay, but let's stay on topic because that's a good point. But Ed Schoenfeld, do you have anything that comes up that you wanted to comment about this in terms of... this is obviously charged, but in terms... do you think it's important that servers look good, that they have high cheekbones and small behinds?
I think what's important from my perspective is that you get a team of people working well together, and that when I hire staffs, I like having characters. I like having interesting people. I like having an interesting mix of people, and I use a lot of intuition when I deal with hiring. I started off actually in kind of an interesting way, because I was on the reverse end of the discrimination situation. I spent 12 years working as the only white guy in a group of not white people. And I was subject to a great deal of hazing and discrimination. I actually had someone pull a gun on me because I was Caucasian.
Was this at Uncle Ty's?
Yeah, I worked with Chinese restaurants for many years where I was the only Caucasian person. And as a person living off gratuities. And so I think that restaurants are best, are most successful when the different parts of them are synergistic. When the idea of the restaurant, the type of food, the type of decoration, the demeanor of the staff all come and work together as a team. That's what I'm looking for when I try to create a situation.
I saw a hand over here. Was there something that you wanted to say? Will you introduce yourself?
Sure.
It's okay.
And my name is Leo Robicek, and I'm a bartender. I just sort of wanted to comment on what everyone's been saying in general. I think we need to realize, as you said, there's I don't know how many thousands of restaurants in New York City. And if we really want to be taken serious as a service community, and we want to not be seen as a stepping stone, and we want to see the service community as a career path, I think we need to realize that there's many different types of restaurants within the industry. And I've worked in a lot of fine dining restaurants or restaurants that have career servers or career people within the service industry, and none of those restaurants would ever ask you to pose a picture. And I think all of us, we all want to seem, or we all think that we're very serious about service, and I think that you need to then pick and choose your battles, because if you're looking and you're applying to places that are asking specifically for photos, then those aren't places that are really going to be looking for great service. Those are places that are looking for more entertainment value.
But this isn't just a type of Hooter type of restaurants, right?
No, they are. They're not Hooter types of restaurants, but they're types of restaurants that tend to be trendy and tend to be about the hip crowd. And they're not restaurants that you go to for respectable service. I've worked for a lot of big restaurateurs, and not any of those, the ones that you would respect, would ever ask for a photo.
Thank you.
And if you say I actually have a few more things to say about that.
Just one more thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then another thing I was mentioning about that, so basically within the service industry, the stepping stone issue is I work in a place that we would love to hire people. We actually are always in a shortage of hiring people. It doesn't matter if you're, white, black, yellow, purple.
Do you want to say what place it is?
Sure. I work at 11 Madison Park. And the thing about it is I would really love to know about I know you're shaking your head over there, fine dining. I would love to know about your survey. Because we don't get enough people that are qualified in general.
Oh, 11 Madison Park is the cream of the crop. So I'm just thinking, you are a white male, and you do have the description of a bartender, and that's fine. But I don't think many people actually have the opportunity in the first
place. I'm sorry, we're trying to take
this. Sorry, this is Reka from Rock New York. I mean, in order to get into that restaurant in the first place, something like 11 Madison Park, add race on there, add a funny accent on there, add being a woman on there. Not everybody can access those cream of the crop restaurants, and I wish all restaurants were like Danny Meyer's 11 Madison Park, but they're not.
No, we can let you respond, but wait, okay, well, let's have you respond, but
just say it's not true at all, because we always
say that again, please.
It's not true at all. We always have open castings, and every single person, no matter who you are, if you want to be in a service, starts in the same place, which would be as a kitchen server / food runner. It doesn't matter who you are. And we have, every single person does. Nobody ever gets hired as a higher job before that, and then you move up. And we have people from every race, color, and so on that move up through the ranks. And we don't, people say, why don't you have more African Americans in your job? It's, we haven't had an African American apply to our job in about 4 months. And we do have African Americans.
Okay, but just quickly, there's someone in the queue here to talk. Will you introduce?
Yeah. Introduce. Marlon J. Barrera. Everybody concentrate to the front of the house. But nobody talk about the back in the house. I'm working for 2 years, restaurant from dishwasher to utility. Recently, 2 months ago, the gentleman said the owner did not break the rule or did not break the rights. I was working 10 hours, 4 days.
Can we come back to you? Because we just want to follow this through. Now, what's your name?
My name is Brigilla. I'm the lead organizing with the Restaurant Opportunity Center. I agree that education is really, really very important, but I think that there is not a complex issue. That it is an unwritten practice from restaurant owners to really discriminate against certain groups. And you have to go, like, you don't have to be going very far away. You can go to any high-end restaurant, and you can see that people who are in the front of the house tend to be for particular ethnicity, and people who are in the back of the house tend to be from another particular ethnicity. And one other thing that I want to be saying, I've been meeting workers here in New York City and other cities, and people take pride of their job that they do. They love what they are doing. And they say, I want my kids to be here, but with this situation that we cannot move forward because there is an unwritten practice, which is if you are a Latino, you most of the time you're going to be in the back of the house.
Okay, thank you. But you are saying that at least your restaurant, you don't get enough qualified workers who are...
I mean, I know I looked white and you said I have chiseled face. I was actually born in Venezuela, and I'm an immigrant to this country as well. That's fine, though. And I look at everyone else that works within my job, and I see myself as a mentor to them, as some of the guys that are busboys or food runners or whatever you want to call them. And I tell them, it's not about what you're doing. It's about education. If you want to move up, you need to start studying all the same things because you need to have all the same qualifications.
Okay, we're going to move on to another charged topic in the industry, which is tipping. And we're going to start by looking at a quick video. It was recorded by writer David Sachs. For those of you that didn't look at his controversial blog post on the Times Complaint Box website, sort of where people rant and rave, this was the sixth most emailed story last year on the Times, New York Times website.
Do you need change? Funny you should ask. Because I just gave you a $10 bill and my latte and raspberry scone came to $5.75. As much as I think you're pleasing to look at and you do magical things with frothy milk, I just don't see your services commanding a 70%+ premium over the market rate for my breakfast. And you, my dear bartender, who cracked open a $4 beer bottle and handed me back my change entirely in a stack of $1 notes. Very subtle. As though the sheer bulk of that paper would deter me from putting it back in my wallet, and defeated, I'd simply leave it there for you like a burnt offering on your sticky altar. At least you two left me a choice, unlike the menu last night, whose fine print stated how parties of six or more will be charged a 20% gratuity. Because there's simply no way that six adults can gauge the service of a meal, one of hundreds in their lives, with any degree of accuracy. Better to just slap us with a perfunctory tax and screw up our orders anyway. Once that tip is locked in, who cares if the fish is cold? Yes, I know you're all underpaid, but guess what? So am I. When I get $500 for an article that I think is worth $1,000, you won't see me email the editor saying, just so you know, service isn't included. Do I ask you to come into my workplace and supplement my meager income? No, I don't. Sure, you're in the service industry. Doesn't that mean that my gratuity should be a reward for better service, or at least an incentive? Oh, sure, I'm cheap. But not as cheap as your boss, apparently, who figures he can pay you the minimum wage of $4.65 per servers, and the customer will just pick up the rest of your living expenses. I could elect not to tip, but that is as much an option as refusing to pay your income tax because you're a member of the Tea Party. So here's the deal. I'll keep forking over my change, you keep smiling, and we'll both lobby for an increase in the minimum wage.
So the written version of this received about 1,500 comments on the Times site. Sachs said he stopped reading after about 20. He was threatened by some of the people writing. People were really angry, and he just wanted you all to know, since he couldn't be here, that he doesn't dislike servers or tipping, but he thinks people should be paid more by the owners and operators, and that the system is confusing and intimidating for some of the people who are trying to tip. I'd like to get someone who hasn't spoken before, but if you have something quick to say, will you tell me your name again?
Sure, Robert Lacavera. If you go out to eat, bring enough money to tip. Yeah. This is America, and the culture here, like other countries, when you go to Japan, you just don't marry a girl. You have to meet their parents, and there's a certain process. But we learn that because when we go to your countries and we visit you, we know what to do.
What about Sachs's
point? You don't tip
point?
In Japan. You don't tip in Europe.
But what
so
about
wait,
his point?
When you come to America, everybody must tip. If you're a tourist, you must tip. If you go out to eat dinner and you and your girlfriend are going to spend $60, you better bring 72 because it's 60 plus 20. Whatever. If, and guess what? If you don't want to tip, don't eat out. Don't come out.
Okay. And what do you have to say?
Hi, my name is Excuse Me, Miss.
Come here.
I'm a server and a bartender for 10 years
you
in
just,
New York City.
You just want to go by Excuse Me, Miss?
That's what everyone else calls me. So it's not mysterious. It's in the video when he said, you know, oh, six adults can go out to eat and figure out, you know, how much we're supposed to pay. Well, guess what? You can't. You know how many times people have not done the math properly, or they are like, can you split this six different ways? Or here's a load of cash and three credit cards, but oh, we only remember to write the tip on one of these credit card receipts. It's garbage. Like 20% of the bill. It's not that hard.
And so a show of hands, how many people say 15%? It's cool. They're trying. I see three hands, kind of, sort of, four or five hands up. 20%, is that the golden rule?
Golden rule.
Everyone? So most people in the room are saying 20%. 25% just because?
Thank you very much. You're
at least a few.
For the 15%ers.
Will you tell me your name?
Eric Brown. I just want to play devil's advocate on the tipping issue. I would consider myself to be, like Robert said earlier, not the world's best waiter, but I'm pretty damn good. And when I serve a table, generally, I get a good tip regardless based on my service. And as I said, playing devil's advocate, if you go the extra mile, 9 times out of 10, you're going to get that nice tip. When I go out to eat, I always tip extra because I'm in the industry and I know what it's like to get a crappy tip. However, you know, part of being in this industry, there are certain things that you know are going to happen. And I'm generalizing again, but generally people from Spain are not going to tip you.
Wow. Okay. Wait a minute. So, did you have something quickly to say about this? What's your name?
Yes.
What's your name?
Rafael Duran. I understand that sometimes, you know, people is, you know, doesn't have a budget or anything. I understand that they can tip from 15% to 25%. One table gives me 15%, the other one 22%. That make it up. But most important of everything is that the respect, because sometimes some customers, they disrespect the waiter. Like, for example, doing this is very disrespectful, or, you know, having an attitude. So
having an
I
attitude.
Will say to those people that, you know, we need respect.
So it's not just tipping, it's also respect. Don't hail me like a cab. Don't pull on my clothes. Were you going to say something? What's your name?
Yeah, sure. Nick Stevenson from Australia. I've been bartending here almost 11 years. I am from Australia. I've seen the movies.
You Are tip. You from Australia?
Yes, I am. You tip. I've seen Crocodile Dundee and all that stuff. They tip over here.
To tip or not tip?
You got to tip. You get tourists from Ireland, England, Australia, wherever, and they're like, why should we tip here? We don't tip in your country. Well, we're in America, mate. You know, that's just the way it
so
is.
So let's say you've waited on me. Where do you work, by the way?
Franklin Park, Brooklyn.
So let's say I go to Franklin Park and you've waited on me just like it's like butter. What do I tip you?
At least $1 a beer and a smile. That would be nice. And
$1 a beer? I've had bartenders sort of look at me with a kind of a half a stink eye when I give them $1. They don't love the dollar.
They're being greedy.
Okay. You know. Maliki McCourt, I just wonder what you think about all this. What do you think about this tipping business?
Well, I've often wondered what it means.
What it means?
Yeah. To ensure promptness, I suppose, is the acronym, is it?
Yes.
I do believe that if you get good service, it should be the 20%. One thing I am confused about is I go to an Indian restaurant where they have a buffet, and the waiter brings along some bread and tea. then I wonder about the, is it 20% there, 15%, 100%?
My understanding, and we're going to talk to the tipping expert in just 1 second, but my understanding is that it should be at least 15%, because if you go back to the buffet a few times and you dirty several plates, they've got to take those dirties. It's like yucky.
I find in restaurants where there's actual service performed that that should be tips. I have reservations about taxi tips because, for example, now having this damn crutch, it used to be drink, getting in and out of the taxi, they don't help me in any way, shape, or form. So I resent. Should I tip somebody who will just sit in his arse there? But restaurants are entirely different, and I think because I know that the folks are not getting a proper wage, we certainly should tip at least 20%.
Well, I know that when I go out, I used to be a server, I tip quite a bit. At least my friends who I dine with say that I do. Like, you're overdoing it. But since most of the people here are servers, do you guys overtip when you go out to eat? Yes. So I'm going to invite Steve DeBlanica to the stage. He wrote a book on tipping called Keep the Change. Yes. Steve, you're also a former server, yes? And this is your second book.
Right. My first book was called Waiter Rant, and it was all about how miserable it can sometimes be to be a waiter, so I know quite a bit about it.
In your book, you say tipping isn't actually based on service. Now, I think when people go out to eat, they think they're calculating their tip according to whether someone served them properly, and you say that's not the case. Why?
That's not the case. Let me relate a little story that I heard from a waiter. He was training a guy, and he had a mishap with the Cherry's Jubilee. He set a customer on fire. The flames were doused, the woman was uninjured, and he was tipped 20%. Here's another bit of wisdom. Dr. Michael Lynn, professor at Cornell University, he did a study that showed buxom blonde women with slim hips made more in tips than their other counterparts in the restaurant. And I was like, did you need a study to tell you that?
So you're saying that it's not the service, it's
both
it's
of those,
other...
Both of those things show you something. They show you that, one, maybe you're responding to the physical appeal of the server, or maybe, such as for that waiter who, you know, had the mishap with the Cherry's Jubilee, maybe you felt sorry for him. But studies have shown that tipping affects service, the quality of service that a waiter provides has as much effect on tipping as whether the sun out is shining outside or not.
That's kind of far out.
It is. But this is nothing new. Back in the 40s, there was a guy who did studies, and he said, people do not tip on service. They do not have the nerve.
They do not have the nerve. So you say, so what do they tip on?
That's a very good question.
Funny I should ask.
Brian. And it's certainly not service. So in my book, I would go, is it why? Why are you tipping? And a lot of it is, if you've been a waiter, you know this. Sometimes you can give the best service in the world and get stiffed. Right? And you could give great service to somebody and, you know, sometimes they'll stiff you. You can give bad service and you can get a great tip. So sometimes there's no rhyme or reason, and you have to wonder why you're getting tipped. And it's all because of those psychological processes that are going on in the customer's head.
I'm interested in that, but also you say that there are three different kinds of tippers. Does this come into play? What are the three different kinds of tippers?
Well, there are three different kinds of tippers in the world. There are fleas, there are Georges, and there are schnors. And these are all little terms that come from Las Vegas. George is a good tipper. Flea, I don't think you need me to explain that. Schnorr, that's the person who wants everything. They want you to be waited on hand and foot, and then they tip you a little bit or very little at all. And I know everyone here is a George, because anyone who's ever waited tables is a good tipper.
So who here wants to comment on this? Do you agree with the three different kinds of tippers, or do you think that that's not really true? There's a hand in the back. Will you introduce yourself? Eric what?
I'd rather not give my last name, if that's okay. Okay.
It's like an AA meeting. Okay, hi, Eric.
Hello. I would add a fourth on there, which is very much like the schnorr, except it's somebody who puts you through the ringer and then tips you extra and thinks that that's how you're
sugar
your
daddy or the
is yeah
yeah. I used to call them pimps, but that's all right.
That's
it's the table. It's the table that sort of needs tough love in a way, you know. And if you give them a little tough love and you go the extra mile, they'll tip you. And that's sort of the unspoken contract. I mean, don't you think that sometimes that goes on?
I think that often they're more interested in giving the tough love rather than receiving the tough love. They want your service, and they want your subjection.
Anyone else have anything to say about us? Tipping isn't based on service. I mean, this is really, I guess, over here on the left, there's...
Chip Moynihan. There's a lot of truth to what you're saying, and an experienced server is going to have a feel for what that where that person's head is
exactly
somewhere
right
in the meal. Mm-hmm. There is another category I'd like to add, which is wise guys, gangsters, okay, who want devotion. Devotion, but then we'll tip outrageously, obscenely, as in, what's the biggest tip you ever got? type of thing. But you're right, there is a murky thing where you do have those people who want, you know, really, really want good service and then won't tip you, and then you get to know who those people are. And you can really, if you're an experienced server, you recognize very quickly who that person is.
Within about how long do you think it is? I mean, I think sometimes if you're
seconds,
yes,
seconds
to about a minute,
from
right?
Posture, do they go to restaurants? What they're wearing, what their language is, how they order, the questions they ask. You can an experienced server, and I'm sure people know what I'm saying. You know, like that, who these people are. Are they from out of town, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you know, you can be wrong. It does happen. But most of the time, you're pretty accurate.
And obviously, you know, I think most servers would like to come across these wise guys with the big bankrolls. But are you saying that it's a little creepy feeling or what?
It can be a little creepy feeling. You can also bang them twice because they come in there with their wives and their girlfriends.
What are you really trying to say?
Wait on as many gangsters as you can.
There's a lot of hands here. The gentleman over here we haven't spoken to yet.
Hi, Mikey Palms, Brooklyn, New York. What about newly gentrified, quote-unquote, neighborhoods, whereby the leases might be longer, the rent might be cheaper, and restaurateurs come in, and they just have an automatic 20% gratuity?
Well, some places, some of the best restaurants have automatic gratuities. Your Per Se, Chez Panisse, I think that they just remove all of that.
So it has nothing to do with service.
Some places try to remove that, like David Sachs was saying. Why create this whole confusing and intimidating process for people and have the range? Does anyone in the restaurant industry have an opinion about including tips or not including tips?
Yeah, I'd say that's another area that...
Andrew Ridgey?
Yep, Andrew Ridgey. That's another area where there's conflicting federal laws and conflicting city laws. Again, going back to the size of the font, is it 15% for parties of 8 or more or parties of 6 or more? Without getting into the details, all of these situations are very difficult to handle. While they seem to the outside world like they should be very straightforward, many of them are, but many of them are not. And often the restaurateur may look like the bad person because they're just trying to comply with conflicting laws. And people don't have time to hear all of this. They just want to go out and enjoy a meal.
Right. So now we're going to move on to our pet peeves and memorable stories section, and we're going to hear from a few customers. If you'd roll tape, please.
When they hover too much over the tables, you know, grabbing something every 5 seconds. I just feel that my space is invaded, and I just want... Thank you. When they hover too much over the tables, you know, grabbing something every 5 seconds. I just feel that my space is invaded, and I just want to relax and enjoy a meal, and I don't want to be rushed out.
Well, when I'm at the bar and there might be what the bartender perceives, a couple of live ones, 3 stools down, and then, boom, my glass doesn't get filled, but somebody else just does. When they don't want to deal with the geezer.
unfriendliness, you know, just somebody who's cold. I just came back from California. Everybody's friendly. You know, I mean, there certainly are plenty of really nice, generous, and helpful people in New York. But it isn't a trend the way it is in California, where everybody's friendly all the time, and they smile.
New Yorkers, you don't smile enough, you know? That was Sean McNye, Len Mednick, and Linda, simply Linda, all sharing their thoughts in Brooklyn. Now, I want to speak... Anyone want to respond to any of these customer pet peeves? Eric?
Yes.
I think it should be mandatory that everyone who's ever eaten in a restaurant should work in a restaurant just for a week.
And you had a theory. Now, just quickly, why?
Well, because, you know, experience teaches. You know, if you have the experience of working in a restaurant for a couple of days, then you know why waiters are the way they are.
And you have a theory sort of about this too, don't you, George?
Chip kind of stole my thunder, so I apologize on that one. That's
about, you know, cab drivers and restaurants, no,
well,
or bars?
Oh, okay. Al McGuire was a famous basketball coach. His thing was that what he said, he was very successful. And he went to college, went to St. John's, and he was a bartender, comes from a family of saloon owners, restaurant owners. And what he said was that everyone who gets out of college for 6 months should drive a taxi and should be a bartender, and the world will be a much better place. So that's his, not mine.
So now I want to speak to a waiter of more than 20 years and blogger, The Bitchy Waiter. I don't know how many of you. Some of you read his blog. And so... what are some of your customer pet peeves? You've been doing this for quite a while, yeah. And so you've been deep undercover. What do you have to say?
Well, I'm sure all waiters have the same pet peeves, but a huge one for me is when they don't bother to look at the menu before they order. And they just come in and decide that they would love to have, oh, spaghetti and meatballs, even though I may be working at a Mexican restaurant. And... or they'll ask for a peanut butter and jelly sandwich for their child because their child is grumpy, but we don't have peanut butter and jelly sandwich on the menu. And they don't understand why it's such a big deal because there's a deli across the street. Can't we just go get peanut butter and jelly just so that their kid can be happy? Read the menu. It's this ingenious thing that they created that has everything that is in our restaurant that you can order. And I say, read it. It comes in handy. We have it memorized. We know it better than you do.
That's a good point. Is there anything else that you think that maybe not pet peeves, but something that you think customers would benefit from knowing?
Well, I think they need to know that we are the face that they see at their restaurant, but there are so many other things that happen that we have nothing to do with. So if their burger may come out a little bit more cooked than they had asked for it, I certainly wrote down medium rare, and I put it into the computer as medium rare, but maybe it stayed on the grill a little bit longer. I didn't taste the burger before it came out. So if it made it to your table and it's a little more well done than you thought, it should be. That's not only my fault. So, but a lot of people think, oh, he brought out the burger. It was well done. No tip for him. And I just want to tell them there's a whole group of people that are trying to make your dining experience a good one. And when you're tipping your waiter, it's not only my service that got you the food, it's the cook, the chef, the runner. Everyone there tries to work as a team, as you said earlier. And they just need to know that.
You meaning Ed Schoenfeld?
Yes,
yeah?
Who said a great restaurant is a successful restaurant if there's a great team. And that's why a lot of us stay in the job so long, because we end up liking the people that we work with more than we like the job sometimes. And I know probably all of us have stayed in a job longer than we wanted to just because all of our friends are still there. And you think, well, the tips were kind of sucky today, but I had a really good time with, you know, Jane today. So we stay because we like it, and it does become a family.
So that's true. It becomes a family. Is there any other things that you think that people don't know about servers, or that you might want to tell customers? You know, we're going to be wrapping up soon, so these are some final thoughts. No, so really choose wisely.
Sure. Nick Stevenson again. Yes, we're not your parents. If you want me to parent you, then tip me more. Addressing the guy who was second who complained about not getting a refill, it's probably because he was grumpy, he was annoying, and he didn't tip. The other customers were probably polite, and they tipped. So therefore, you will be backed up. It's, you know, tips to ensure prompt service. It's also just being a friendly face. If they're nice to you, you're nice to them. The world goes around. Everyone's happy.
Have you ever had a customer that you just that you thought was amazing? I mean, that you just have, you know, on the other side, have you made friends with customers?
Absolutely. Most of my friends are my customers. Yeah.
Wow. So I see someone over here who... I want to hear what you have to say, and then I also want to hear one thing you think that people don't know about waiters or bartenders. What's your name?
My name is Sean Stover, and the bar that I've been working at predominantly for the last 8 years, I've been very lucky to have a great employer, and the family thing with us is huge. I've been working with the same people that have been working even longer than I've been. But the one thing that I think is so funny is I serve the same people 5 days a week, like, consistently.
The regulars.
And I about what the author said about the different roles, depending on a day-to-day basis, I can have the same people, and they can be one role one day and another role the other day.
Right. So sometimes they want you to be daddy, and other times they want you to be what?
To be honest, sometimes if I act a little mean, I actually get a better tip, depending on the situation.
Can I get an applause for people that agree? Sometimes...
But like I said, I've been fortunate, but I want to say I think my biggest pet peeve with the
customers.
Well, not just the customers. It's basically like I'll have somebody come in and order a drink, and they'll be like, can I get a Long Island iced tea, but make it strong? And then, like, I'm sitting there, and I'm like, do you know what a Long Island iced tea is? Like, again, like, look at the menu, like, what you're ordering type of thing. But, I mean, overall, I want to say, what was the other question you wanted to say?
What do you think what is something that people don't know about servers if they haven't done the job?
We're generally very nice and happy people, but you're the ones that make us crazy. That's
what it comes out. Will you come closer and introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Eve. I work in New York City. I've been a server and a bartender on and off for 10 years, and I think one of the most important things that people don't realize is that it's an extremely difficult job and it wreaks havoc on the body. I also work in the healthcare profession, and people don't realize how hard these people are running around, literally, for them, serving them hand and foot sometimes. And they go home after working hours and hours on their feet and incurring an incredible amount of injury. And most of the time, no one is covered by health insurance. So at the very least, appreciate the labor.
What do you think that people don't understand about servers? What's your name?
My name is Jill Smith. Getting back to children, I work in a very casual place, and people bring their kids in, and we're not their babysitters. Or, this is New York, babysitters get $20, $30 an hour, so include that in the tip.
Malachi, what's on your mind?
On my mind was, I made a list of one thing that happened to me one afternoon in the saloon. A fellow came in, he sat down, said, what time is it? I told him the time. Could you pass the peanuts? So I did. Do you have change for a dollar? So I gave him change for a dollar. Could I have a glass of water? Okay. Could I have a squeeze of lemon in it? Could I have a telephone directory? I was getting, this is astounding. This is going on. Could I have more ice in my water? Where is the men's room? Do you have a paper napkin? And would you wipe the bar, please? And then could I have a newspaper? And there were 10, 11 requests, and he never ordered anything. He sat and read the newspaper, and I was rendered, which is astonishing for me, I was rendered speechless.
I know of a bar on the Lower East Side where they keep sort of a hall of fame of the most memorably bad customers. It's sort of like a bad checklist. Now, they'll still wait on these people, but I think it's just I think this guy would have been in the hall of fame.
He would. Well, the other guy I had that came in one night and he said, I want to talk to you. I said, speak. He said, not here. And I said, why not? He said, well, it's important. So I figured I better. You always look at potential lunatics and get them out without forcing anybody. So we stepped outside and he said, not here. We down the street.
You really went down the street with him?
Yeah. And Maliki's was was the first singles bar in America, actually. And so we moved down the street. He dropped to his knees and drew a circle, a chalk circle around my feet.
Where could this possibly end up?
On Third Avenue, yes. So he said, don't go back in. And he left.
That's amazing. So just finally, if anyone has any thoughts about where this industry could be going. Now, we know that servers often feel judged. Is this a career that could actually gain respect? Could there possibly be celebrity waiters as in addition to celebrity chefs? Can you introduce yourself?
Ladies first, again, I'm very much concerned about our dignity and respect. And I have a short story where I'm working in the Cosmopolitan Club and taking care of all moms. So it's very, very difficult to take care of them.
And every time. This is a private club, right?
Yes, it is a private club. But one thing they don't know that I'm a server, very dignified. I claim myself. I need respect and a dignity. But a lot of time they treat me very often like I'm servant, but I'm not servant. Very nicely, I used to remind them because I'm chef. My job is very chef because I'm the local six. I know a lot of people, they cannot tell their story.
The union.
Yeah. Exactly, because I can tell them I am a server, very dignified server. I need your respect, but I am not your servant. But they always treat like that, pulling my jacket, you know, when I'm busy like that. And they do not know I'm only server. They think sometimes I am cook too. Cobb salad, it takes 25 minutes, where is Cobb salad? Mom, I don't do that. It first comes
you,
first.
You call them mom?
Yeah, I do. Nicely, I treat them because I do not have any risk. That's the story.
Final thoughts. What's next for this career, do you think, Robert?
I believe that the only way that this stature of service is going to change is if the people that come in understand what we do, how long we've been doing it. The injuries to lower back is quite evident. 8 hours, even 10, 12 hours on your feet. And if you work other shifts and if you're working another place or you go to school and travel time, this is New York, no one gets in a car and drives like California. We're all physically ailed. And if people just understand about the labor and the service, I think it'll change. But until then, I think it's going to just meander where it is.
So I'm Reka from Brock, New York. I just want to say that turnover is highest in the industry more than any other industry. And as a server, as a worker, I can tolerate, I think, taking really bad treatment from a guest if I'm being provided paid sick days, if I'm being given vacation, if I'm getting decent wages and not having my tips stolen. And I think when the industry recognizes that investment in their workers, I think that there's going to be a lot less turnover and better profits for everybody.
And I have someone here, will you tell me your name and where you work, maybe?
My name is Kimmy Schweitzer, and I work at Toast on the Upper West Side. And I don't really think that this is going to change because you have a majority of people who go into this industry working who don't want to be there. They don't have aspirations of making it their professional career. So until that changes, it's really not going to change.
Have you been... Are you employed in this industry?
Well, I'm unemployed at the moment, but I was at the Rainbow Room for 21 years, and unfortunately, Mr. Cipriani had various activities with the tax people that led to the closure of the restaurant. But
what's your name, by the way?
Colin Davis. We suffered a lot from having many European tourists that just don't understand the tipping. So we were in a catch-22 situation where, you know, if we didn't say anything, they wouldn't tip. And if we did, we were considered rude. And also, there's the tax
factor. If you're audited, the tax man will say, you know, you should have made X amount, you know, because we were a high turnover and, you know, we could be paying taxes on tips that we never got.
You're a journeyman in this career, this industry. Do you have any future, any predictions that could possibly be positive or not?
Well, one thing, in my country, the UK, this job is not treated, you know, as a respectable job, and it's the same in the US. So I don't think the attitude will change until, as the young lady said, people take the job seriously from our side and customers understand, you know, what's involved in the job itself, how difficult it is.
Well, thank you so much. We're going to have to wrap it up. Thank you for taking the time out of your day and for sharing your stories. And we'll be posting this show up on our website. So thank you very much.